Blog Talk Radio.
I am politically incorrect and damn proud of it. I love my country, but I'm scared to death of its government. You believe what you read because it's all that we give you. Because all the history is written by winners. I'm engaged in a frenzy of mass self-destruction. And I feed upon your famine to fuel my corruption. I'm wholesaling hatred and international incest to carnivorous hyenas in a global death bed. I've mastered the arts of death and foreign nation genocide. Those who turn on me commit national suicide.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says...
All right, everybody. Linda, you got sound now? Because I don't want you guys to miss this. Perfect. So let me start this over. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I got to get it out there. So hang tight with me.
I am politically incorrect and damn proud of it. I love my country, but I'm scared to death of its government. You believe what you read because it's all that we give you. Because all the history is written by winners. I'm engaged in a frenzy of mass self-destruction. I feed upon your famine to fuel my corruption. I'm wholesaling hatred and international incest to carnivorous hyenas in a global death bed. I've mastered the arts of death and foreign nation genocide. Those who turn on me commit national suicide.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah!
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Fuck hope. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. Fuck them. Fuck them. I don't vote. Two reasons. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a fucking thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on Election Day, I'm in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, everybody. It's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. And the Constitution Hour is, of course, brought to you by Patriot Families. That's Patriot Families with a YS. And I'm going to make this statement one time, and one time only. So for those of you that are listening, you have the benefit of my apology. For those of you that aren't listening, too bad. This will be the only time that I apologize in the coming months and years. I apologize if the adult language in the intro has offended you. I know that it is a Patriot Families website, and I know that a lot of folks out there are offended by quote-unquote offensive language. Well, you do have the right to just turn it off and tune me out. That said, I'm a little bit fired up today, more than usual, but that's really not wholly accurate. I'm always fired up. I just don't always display it in such an egregious manner. But I think perhaps that might be one of the reasons why nothing has changed. Nothing is changing. We've been too polite. So I'm going to put an end to that. I'm not going to be as polite anymore. I'm sick and tired of babysitting and hand-holding. You people, you know who you are, and if you don't, you will by the end of this program know who you are. One of the things that I've been trying to express since I very first got onto Patriot Families, since I very first did my very first radio program on Blog Talk Radio, and for quite some time before I had that venue available to me, one of the things, the main thing that I've been trying to express to people, it's the monetary system stupid. Get it? Every single one of your complaints about your government, about the way that government is handled, the bureaucracy, all of it, every single bit of it revolves around monetary policy. Now, there are a few pet issues out there that aren't technically driven by monetary policy. And those are the issues that I want to speak to tonight, along with many of the monetary issues. But I want to start out with the other coin, the other side of the coin. And this goes directly to the folks that I'm telling you, you know who you are. And that is the morality issue. What in the hell possesses any one of you individuals listening to the sound of my voice to believe that you have the right or the authority to impose your moral ideology on anyone else. You know, I've asked and spoken about in the past the purpose of the law. I understand that many folks out there that listen and attend and are members of Patriot Families are Christian. I, too, see myself as a Christian, not because I want other people to believe in my moral ideologies or my own moral standards, but because I want people to know Christ, their Savior. And in speaking of Christ, we come directly to the biblical meaning of the law. What was the purpose of the law? Let's go back to Leviticus and read it, shall we? The purpose of the law was not to just punish people, per se. The punishment was provided for in the law, but why does the law provide for punishment in the first place? What is the purpose of punishing transgressions? Why? What is it for? Can anyone answer that question? Why do we punish those who trespass against us? Why are they persecuted? Why are they put in prison? Why do they have to pay restitution? What is the purpose? Can anyone tell me? The purpose, ladies and gentlemen, is reconciliation. Okay? If you didn't get that, I suggest you go back, get your Bible out, and read it. Read Leviticus. The whole purpose of the law was A, to let people know what God considered a transgression against Him personally. Why? Because they're His rules. Secondly, to provide for a remedy. What kind of remedy? Recompense, reconciliation. The sacrifice, the punishment, was to reconcile you with God. Now, some of the punishments were very grave indeed. In fact, they would take your life. Stoning would be one of those. Now, I'm not here to judge God's judgment. I'm simply going to tell you the purpose of the law. Now, all throughout the Bible, we come to understand that the law is deficient. God's not deficient, but the law itself is. Why is that? Well, it's deficient because none of the payments, none of the recompense is sufficient to truly reconcile you with God. And so, not even your own life, the surrender of the greatest gift that God gave you, life, is not sufficient reconciliation or redemption for your transgressions. So God sent the perfect reconciliation, the perfect redemption, the ultimate and only redemption in Christ Jesus, who shed His blood, perfect blood, for you upon the cross. That said, man, in our infinite wisdom or lack thereof, somehow have stumbled upon the idea that we can outdo God by creating our own laws here in society to force our understanding of God's moral laws on others. Those of you who go about wanting to force others to behave in a way that you find morally correct are no better than the Muslims. Now, I'm sure you're going to have some disagreement with me on that. But whether you use the force of your own arms or the force of a government, how do you differentiate? How is it that you justify using a whole plethora of bureaucrats to force your moral ideology on another human being and say that you're no different or say that you're better than the Muslims? Is that not what Islam does? Either you do it our way, you follow our moral guidelines, or we kill you. Well, it's much the same with the laws here in the United States. Either you bow down to our moral ideology, or we'll put you in prison. We will end your life socially. We will take away from you your freedom, your liberty, your ability to do anything but sit in a prison cell. Many Christians out there, if they had their way, would make homosexuality a crime punishable by imprisonment. We do the same thing with drug use. I find it infuriating, among other words that I could use, when people sit around drinking beer, alcohol, taking prescription medications, smoking cigarettes, using chewing tobacco, or aspirin, or taking homeopathic remedies, and yet decry the use of illicit drugs. I'm sorry, but there's a word for that, a term. It's called hypocrisy. But see, we don't notice our own hypocrisy because it's legal to do what we're doing. It's legal to take barbiturates. It's legal to take codeine and cocaine and heroin if it's under a doctor's care or prescription. That's different. Horse manure. You're just justifying the same behavior that you want to curb or control in others. What gives you the right? Where does your authority come from? Did God himself give you a moral directive to go out and clobber your neighbors and restrict their behavior at every possible opportunity? Because if he did, I've not read that in the Bible that I read and the one that I have read. Holy crap, that thing is annoying. It's squeaking like a madman over there. Sorry. I'm sorry to point these things out to you, but it is the hypocrisy that we are living with. And as long as we continue to be hypocrites and try to focus on correcting the behavior in other human beings that we don't necessarily approve of, we will be failures, period. We will continue to fail. Now, how does this have anything to do with monetary policy, economic issues? Well, it has everything to do with it. Because you see, one of the things that prompts us to create a government, form a government, is we want that government to do what we don't have the courage to do ourselves. And that is to go next door to our neighbor's house, pull a gun on them, and force them to capitulate to our way of thinking. Oh, well now, there we are. We're right there with Islam, aren't we? Only we're not personally doing it, so we give ourselves an out, justification. And the fallback is always the same. Well, it's the law. Well, that's true. And just because it's the law doesn't mean it's right. And there we go, violating the very moral code that we're attempting to enforce. It's a catch-22. Or is it? Perhaps, maybe, by some slim miracle, we might be able to grow up and actually begin to live out those very morals and principles that we so desperately cling to, that we so adamantly want others to obey, that we won't need those laws, because if everyone was cleaning up their own house, if everyone was putting forth the effort to live by those ethical and moral ideologies, they wouldn't have time to worry about their neighbors. See, if everyone would pull the 4x4 post out of their eyeball before they went to pick at the little speck in their neighbor's eye, they'd be too busy tending to their own wounds to worry about what their neighbor was doing. But we don't work that way now, do we? No, because we like to see ourselves as better. We like to think that we're better than that. We don't act that way. We're better than the left. We're better than the right. We're better than the independents. We're better than the blacks. We're better than the illegals. We're better than the drug dealers. Horse crap. You're peddling the same BS in a different package. And since we're on the subject of the economic thing, we'll segue into that now. Immigration. Heard a lot of folks over the last 8 years really fussing and raising a stink over illegal immigration. Now, why do you suppose that illegal immigration happens? Of course, there is always going to be exceptions to the general rule. There are going to be case-by-case instances where the general rule just doesn't apply. And if you tell me that these people come here because America is a bastion of freedom, I'm going to tell you that you're an idiot. You haven't been paying attention. Immigration, illegal immigration, is a direct result of monetary policy. Without immigration, the outright failure of our current policy would be obvious to everyone. Part of that policy may be well-intentioned. I think a good bit of the policy is well-intentioned. But you see, it perpetuates these unforeseen problems. Farmers, they can't survive on grain prices. You know, I've shared with you in the past, my grandfather was a farmer, my great-grandfather was a farmer. I saw what they were getting paid per bushel of corn back in the 19-teens and the 1920s, and in the 1980s, there wasn't 2 cents, literally 2 pennies per bushel difference. Granted, that's all changed a bit now, but you see, the farmers, they couldn't survive, so they needed subsidies, or at least that's what some of them thought. So the government produces a subsidy to subsidize the farmer so that they can continue producing. And that drives up the cost of the goods that the farmer is producing. The price that the farmer is receiving doesn't go up in correlation to the increase in the cost of goods. Pretty soon, through regulation, all well-intentioned, we end up with a situation where an individual who has the ability to go out and work for a local farmer in a field doing manual labor tasks, well, they can't afford to do so. Well, that's crazy, you might say. How is it they can't afford to do that? How is it you can't afford to have a job? Well, it gets pretty simple and basic. When the government has so many subsidies and handout programs that you're making more money sitting on your duff at home than you would if you actually took a job, you get the picture. You know, you go to work for Joe Farmer, and the work is seasonal, so you might have to travel around like most of the illegal immigrants do. And, you know, those farmers, they don't offer health care. There's really no benefits to speak of. Well, gosh, you know, I've got three kids, and I need health care coverage, and I need all these other things. I need. And it just snowballs and snowballs. You know, there's an old adage that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I think it's true. You know, manufacturing losses here at home are a direct result of the same policy, the reason that our immigration crisis exists at all. And we look at education. When we talk about education, you know, that's been a big topic of late. Look at all of the government grants and subsidies available for low-income people to go to school, right? So what's the consequence? What is the consequence, or one of the consequences, of sending a whole bunch of otherwise able-bodied people to institutions of quote-unquote higher learning, people that otherwise wouldn't end up in college? They wouldn't have those aspirations because it's just too expensive. It's out of reach for them. That doesn't make them less than. It just means that they fit into a different segment within our society. You know, America wasn't built by the American Society of Engineers. While they certainly played a part, the engineers are of no avail whatsoever if there is not a labor force, a whole enormous workforce of people able to put into action, to realize the plans and inventions and ideas of all the engineers and scientists. And you see, we've educated our working class people in colleges, and they all have degrees, and many of them have student loans that are enormous, and they couldn't possibly pay off those student loans working for Joe Farmer, number one, and number two, it's beneath them because, after all, they have a college degree. We have cheapened education, higher education, university, degrees. Because now, just about anybody can qualify for some form of government assistance to get a college degree. And the degree doesn't even have to be in anything productive. It could be in interpretive arts, for God's sakes. That's pretty productive if you're an interpretive artist. Because after all, once you get out of college, you know, there are grants that you can qualify for from the government where they'll pay for your crappy water paintings, or they'll pay for you to urinate in a beaker and put a crucifix in it, so that you can make a statement. We have lost our reason. We have lost, if we ever had it, our ability to think critically. We have become a nation of polite idiots. And I don't see it getting any better anytime soon. And this segues right into what I was talking about at the opening of the show. All these good intentions, right? I understand. I don't disagree with many of you that homosexuality is wrong. It's morally wrong. It's a very dangerous lifestyle to be living. But what is your solution? Outlaw it. Well, let's think about that for a moment. Let's take it to its logical conclusion. Let's say that President Obama wakes up tomorrow morning and the Congress agrees with his ideology that being a homosexual should be punishable by a prison sentence. Think about the implications for a moment. Are you getting an idea in your head of what would occur? Let's say the police go out and they start rounding up homosexuals. anyone who is caught with any kind of homosexual material, anyone who's caught exchanging emails of a homosexual nature, what's an automatic 5-year prison sentence? Where are we going to send them? Well, yes, boys and girls, we're going to send them to prison. So what are we going to do? We're going to build a building. We're going to hire guards. We're going to create an entire infrastructure so that we can house them and feed them. But wait, it gets better, Linda, because there's something else you're not thinking of. So now we have this building, and there are thousands of homosexuals in this building who have caretakers. They're clothed, fed, and they're in a building full of sexual deviants that think just the same way they do. Well, it's got to be just this side of paradise for them. We overthink things. We try too much to force our opinion on others. The law should allow or recompense, reconciliation. You know, there used to be a time when people said he has paid his debt to society. Where did that debt originate? That debt originates in a transgression against another person or that person's property. That's known in the law as a trespass or a tort. Now, it used to be that the law was cut and dried. There had to be an actual injury, what's known in the law as an injury in fact. Not a presumed injury, not the possibility of an injury sometime in the future, not that an injury could have happened had we not curtailed the activity ahead of time, but an actual injury. So when someone did something that caused injury to another human being or that human being's property, there had to be a mechanism because, you know, not everyone has in their pocket enough coins to make the individual who's been injured whole again. And after all, we don't operate a debtor's prison, right? But that's exactly what prison is. It's a way to repay your debt. Now, the debt may not be repaid to the individual, but it's society at large. It's supposed to be the punishment phase of the law is supposed to be a way for the individual who has trespassed against a member of society to be made whole again in the eyes of society. How well is that working out for us? How many of you listening to the sound of my voice would meet an ex-convict and think, well, he's paid his debt and he's just like everybody else? Right. You're fooling yourself if you say that you think that. We got to stop, guys. And it has to begin somewhere. And I cannot sit here and complain about government and the direction our country is heading without calling others onto the carpet for their ignorant behavior towards their fellow human beings. It is that very behavior that has brought you the government that you so despise now. And it looks like we have a caller on. I believe that's Mr. Robert.
Mr. Ron Calder, how you doing?
Robert, I'm doing pissed off is how I'm doing.
Oh, I don't blame you. I'm pissed off too, so it doesn't matter, does it?
Well, it does. And you know, to me, I'm sorry. I understand people's heartfelt passion for some of their pet issues. You know, gay rights, abortion, the list is endless. But those two, I think, are at the top of the list for the majority of people. And I'm sorry, you know, I disagree with both of those things. But that doesn't mean, right, but that doesn't mean that I think I have the right to enforce my belief on someone else. And if I advocate for the government to do it for me, how am I any damn better than a Muslim who wants to wage jihad because I don't believe in his ideology? You laugh, but I'm being absolutely serious.
I laughed because that was a great analogy. You know what really bugs me is that's how Obama won the election through the Latino vote.
You're right. And either way you slice it, it's fanaticism.
You know, he got ahead of the guy. He ran a brilliant campaign. He beat the crap out of Mitt Romney. And Mitt Romney just sat there like a wuss and didn't fight back. He just sat there and played it safe. You know, he didn't go after Benghazi. You know, what really, really bothers me, here's Feinstein, you know, Linda Sills' rival enemy, at the presidential, ready to oust Obama over Benghazi. And here Trey is having an affair. Man, my God, you know, it's just like...
Right. You know, I read something today. A guy made a great point. He said a 4-star general in service to his country for decades, mm-hmm. a true hero, if you will,
mm-hmm.
has an extramarital affair and has to resign in disgrace. A sitting president has an extramarital affair in the Oval Office, lies about it, is impeached, and is still exonerated as a hero.
Yeah.
And you still have 90% of Americans believing you can legislate moral behavior one way or the other.
Good evening, both of you. It's been pretty
hey,
wild.
Linda.
Hi. The point about the morality, it you know, when you talk, you made the case of the throwing the the gays into jail, but they have caused no injury. They have, I mean, yes, it's an abomination in God's eyes, but I mean.
But that's not up to us to judge, number one, right?
Right. But
and
it's
number
not
two,
one of the Big Ten. I don't think it's, you know, like the guy goes out and just slashes a few throats, then you got an issue. You have
well,
some injury
that's a
there.
Trespass on another human being. As long as it's between two consenting adults and not, you know, an adult and a child,
right.
Society has no business getting involved in it. They can be disgusted. They can turn up their nose and walk away.
I get it. You made the point quite well. I understand what we, you know, and Carlin was fabulous. That was hysterical. And the reason it's funny is because it's true.
Yes.
And, you know, the reflection, we, you know, we're looking in the mirror at these people. Now, granted, I think many of them are far beyond, you know, I mean, I can see the radical upbringing of Obama. I don't think he's had a good intention since he was 5. But, you know, this, to me, he's one of God's enemies. I'm not dealing with him anymore. I just, you know, I throw him off my shoulders at night in prayer because I can't deal with that. That's just too much for me. And he's not alone. I mean, my God, he's got an army of crazies behind him.
An army? Let me tell you, I want to play you guys a clip. I'm not trying to cut you off here. This is about 6 minutes long. But
okay.
this is the thing that, you know, I was thumbing around the internet today and I listened to this and, wow, Robert, you got a jet booster on that skydiving pack there. This is the clip that I listened to that got me so bent out of shape today that I can't stand it. And everyone, any person with one shred of decency in this country should be furious over this, and nothing is being done about it. They'd rather argue over abortion and gay rights and legalizing pot. Listen to this clip.
Hi, I'm Maggie. In the next few minutes, I'm going to tell you a horrendous tale of sexual and emotional abuse that happened to me at the TSA checkpoint in Birmingham, Alabama. This incident happened as I was traveling from Birmingham to my home in San Diego. I have two artificial knees, and without a body scanner, I will trigger a metal detector and be required to have a pat-down. As expected, this happened to me at this checkpoint. The female assist began her pat-down, was extremely, extremely invasive with her hand pressure between my thighs, between my legs, on my female body parts, on both the front and the back side. After this, she turns to me and tells me I can leave after the glove test passes. Minutes go by, a second agent comes to me and informs me the first agent found a protrusion and abnormality between my legs on the left side. I'm shocked. You know, I'm humiliated. I don't know what to say. And so I blurt out, I don't have a penis. And she looks at me and she says, well, I'm going to have to perform a second pat-down on you. So she performs a second pat-down, and this one is so invasive, so uncomfortable, painful, that I would consider it akin to sexual assault. After this pat-down, she turns to me and says that her findings are the same as the first, that there is a protrusion, there is an abnormality between my legs. I'm a normal female, 58-year-old female. My husband, my OBGYN, my doctors have never, ever told me that I was anything but normal. So I am in total disbelief. I think this is a joke. So she said she has to go talk to her manager, and she talks to her manager, the male manager. There are a whole bunch of TSA agents now looking at me, men and women, discussing my private parts, discussing my abnormality between my legs. The manager comes over and asks me if I have anything I need to say. And I'm looking at him like, no. And you know, I'm totally embarrassed talking to a man. I'm totally just humiliated. And I said, I don't have a protrusion. I'll take my pants off. I'll show you. I'm just a normal female. He leaves. And then they take me to a private screening room. In the private screening room, at least three or four TS agents walk in. And at this point, I'm shaking, I'm crying, I'm humiliated, I'm feeling sexually assaulted. I pull my pants off and just throw them on the floor. And these women look at me like shocked. And I'm standing there, and I spread my legs, and from the waist down, all I have on are a pair of cotton underwear. And I point at my crotch and I tell them, I say, do you see anything abnormal here? Do you see a protrusion? And they look and they say, ma'am, put your pants back on. You know, this is unnecessary. Then the third screener comes up to me, and she performs the third screening. Very thorough, very efficient, but she does touch every private part between my leg. And she turns to the women in the room, and she says, this screening is normal. There is nothing abnormal. There's no growth. There's nothing on the left side. And I'm like, of course there's not. You know, I just want to get out of here. I just want to wake up from this nightmare.
Is that my doorbell?
And at that point, the second TSA screener comes in who screened me, and she has a wand in her hand, and she hands it to this screener who found nothing and says, you wand her crotch. This woman looks at her and she says, no, I'm not going to do it. My findings were normal. And she hands the wand back to this other TSA screener. She wands my crotch and up and down my thighs over my private parts. You know, nothing. There's nothing there. So they have to do the third glove test. That comes back negative. I'm rushing out of this private room, and the supervisor and the manager come over me, hand me an evaluation form, apologize. And I looked at this evaluation form, and it's like, you know, please write your comments to the TSA on how well we are doing our job. And I look at them, and I say, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't believe that you've just subjected me to this sexual assault, this emotional assault. And there are bad guys out there doing things. I'm a 58-year-old aging baby boomer. Why are you picking on me? You know, and then I looked at him and I said, you know what? At the very least, you need to fire these two TSA agents who did the first screening. They're either A, incompetent and untrained, or B, they're abusing their power. And furthermore, I'm going to contact every senator, every congressman, every ethics committee, every watchdog, every advocacy group, my attorney, everyone I know, media, and let them know how horrible this incident was for me. It's been about 3 days since this happened, and I, in retrospect, I'm thinking about it. I'm still humiliated. I still get upset. I still cry thinking about the sexual abuse and how these strangers could put their hands all over me and say the things about my anatomy that they said. And I want to get this story out. Please, please have your friends, your coworkers, your family, your loved ones see this. Please let them see the egregious abuse of power that the TSA has been using on just everyday passengers like me. I don't want this to happen to any woman, man, or child like what happened to me. And I just think this needs to be stopped. You know, our country is a country of great civil liberties. Our country is a country of great people. And why the TSA is allowed to emotionally and sexually abuse passengers, I don't get it. If some stranger did to me what one of these TSA agents did, that stranger would be convicted of sexual assault and sent to prison. Please, please get my story out. Thank you.
I want one of these jerk-offs that think the NDAA and the U.S. Patriot Act are a good idea. I want them to call in right now, 646-378-0321. Justify to me what that lady went through. Justify it to me. I dare you.
It's horrendous.
It's past horrendous.
Oh, it's Nazi Germany, honey. We're there. I'm convinced.
This is going on every single day in the United States of America, and not just to women, but to men and children. And the fact that this woman is so degraded and I might add, so compliant that she's willing to take her pants off and show them makes me very, very angry. There is no excuse for this in any country, in any civilized society. No excuse whatsoever. And I dare anyone to call in and try to defend it in any way, shape, or form. It's indefensible.
No, absolutely. My God.
I'm telling you, I'm so pissed off. And this, we've got nothing but a damn nation full of cowards.
You got it.
Moral cowards. That poor woman.
So sad.
That poor woman is terrified, and she sits there, and God bless her, but she talks about civil liberties. No, I'm sorry. How about my rights? To hell with civil liberties. I don't need a government or anyone else to grant me the right to my person, my body. There's no excuse for it, none. And the fact
that we
tolerate it.
I know, and I vowed I won't fly. I won't go through any of it anymore. I refuse. I won't do it.
You know, I've joked that, everyone should go to the local airport and, you know, put a salami down their trousers
oh,
and try
geez.
To go through security. And I say that half jokingly. But we should. It's ridiculous. We shouldn't tolerate it.
I don't know where it's going to go. I look what we have in Congress. I told my mom today, I said 95% of them should be fitted with cement shoes, and at least they could help the ecosystem and be food for the fish for a few minutes.
You know,
I'm serious.
My question is
I hate
this.
Them.
My question is this. We're supposed to be a nation of laws. One of the maxims of law is that there is always a remedy at law. Where is the remedy for this woman?
None. Or anybody that's gone through this. Every minute of every day in the airport. And what astonished me was when I went to Indiana and back. I mean, of course, it was the height of the travel season because it was summer. The lines were horrendously long. The airports were packed. It was like full steam ahead, and, you know, some roaring 20s just hit. I don't understand it. I honest to God, for a matter of convenience, which there's no, it's inexcusable, you're right. To go on an airplane, they, you know, I have stated this in so many times. People, you know, don't understand that everything that we thought was, you know, true in our country, they have lied to us, Ron, for over 130 years. They have been, they have been screwing us up one side and down the other. Now it's time, to quote Valerie Jarrett, well, it's payback time.
Well, you know, by the very fact, and it is, I you know, it's an inarguable, scientific, demonstrably provable fact that we are bipedal, and the vast majority of us are born with two legs so that we can do something, which is walk. And walking, right. another word for walking is traveling.
Yep.
So that would imply that we have an implied right to travel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now,
regardless of the method.
Right. We could argue that an airline, a company that provides a service to us to travel, to carry us from point A to point B, would certainly be within their rights, okay, if they wanted to institute as a company policy that you had to go through a strip search before you boarded their conveyance. Nothing is stopping them from doing that, and nothing would stop a competitor from cropping up right next door and saying, hey, we don't do that. You can come right on, and we'll carry you wherever you want to go. No search needed. That's called free market.
Exactly.
But we don't have that.
What we have
is totalitarianism. It's oppression.
You got it.
And it is disgusting. It's sickening. And what sickens me most about it is that the majority of people simply accept it.
And put up with it. Day in and day out. I don't get it either, Ron. You know, I heard somebody say on one of the radio shows, it's time for people like you and me and the Patriot families, those who really truly get it, to start living and acting like a people that that wants to live freely. Like you said before, the stop complying. I'm doing everything I can. I mean, I don't even know what else I can do other than, you know, figure out how to get a missile to some place that will do the most good.
Look, I mean, the long and the short of it is we can sit here and talk about, you know, the economic issues. What happens? I mean, what in God's name is it going to take for those of us that get up, go to work every day, and half of what we earn is stolen from us?
I know.
To provide subsidies, to subsidize those of the rest of society. What happens, you know, if we all just decide, screw it, I'm not doing it anymore, and we start not complying, what are they going to do if they put all of us in jail? Who's going to pay for all that?
It's
who's going
to
pay
happen.
For all the goodies?
Right. There will be no money. If the money is gone, it's over. You know, I mean, I get your point. In fact, the other guy that I was listening to, he's a morning guy here, local, and he was talking about this. The lies about, you know, how the theater and the circus going on with, you know, Boehner and the rest of these coneheads. And you hear this stuff about higher taxes for the rich and the deficit. Well, you can't fix a deficit because the deficit is not the problem. It's a symptom of the problem. When you have, if you took every ABC agency that's considered, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, which I could name quite handily, and there's millions of them, and you cut them off tomorrow at 100%, didn't pay it ever again, and took your military defense spending and just wiped that off the books, you have Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and welfare. Those are the big four. Until you address that mess, it ain't going away. It's not going away.
No one has the moral courage, okay, or the honesty and integrity to say what needs to be said.
Exactly.
And the problem is not how do we pay for, you know, Social Security, but, Medicare, and Medicaid. The issue is we should at least at this juncture recognize the error of our ways. These programs should never have been implemented. They are an abject failure. They are a millstone around the neck of the United States of America and our economic production.
Exactly. I know. I agree with you.
Just as their detractors said they would be back when these things were first proposed.
I'm telling you. No, if it was up to me and I got to do it, believe me, they would be gone tomorrow, and then people would be on their own. And, of course, you'd have to do a whole bunch of other stuff like Ron Paul would have loved to have done, go back to the Constitution and fix this dishonest monetary system, and you'd have the roaring 20s on steroids. This country could flourish if you get rid of these, you know, totalitarian planners, you know.
Well, and I have
crazy.
I have a hunch, and I got an email today, and I just read the email earlier. I have not clicked on the survey, so I want to read it for everyone because I have a suspicion, and I could be wrong. So this is an opportunity for everyone out there. You might see me be dead wrong on the air. This is from Jenny Beth Martin, who is the quote-unquote official leader of the Tea Party Patriots. I want to read the disclaimer before I read the email, because down at the bottom it says, Tea Party Patriots Incorporated operates as a social welfare organization organized under Section 501(c)(4) of the Internal Revenue Code. Contributions to Tea Party Patriots, Inc. are not deductible as charitable contributions for income tax purposes. Now, we know, Patriots, that it has been a long week, and that for some of us it is still hard to fathom the way the elections turned out. But we have vowed to continue our fight, and we know that you will continue as well. As we have done at the end of each year of our existence, today we are releasing our survey to gauge where the movement would like us to go as an organization. Each year we have done one of these surveys to ensure that we are doing what the Tea Party movement as a whole would like us to do. This is how we determine the direction and issues that we will take on in the coming year. Hope you will give us your feedback. So I'm going to go on and take the survey. Election follow-up. Which activities did your local group participate in? Okay, you're not. Priority issue. Which is the top issue that you want Tea Party Patriots to engage in? Check only one. Oh, let's see. A balanced budget amendment. Balance the federal budget to stop overspending in 5 years or less. Stop debt ceiling increases. Repeal Obamacare. Prevent Obamacare. Defund Obamacare. Reform the tax code without raising taxes. Prevent tax increases. Presidential nominations. Treaties the Senate might pass. Supreme Court nominations. Investigation into Benghazi. Property rights. Sustainable development. Okay. Really?
Wow.
Seriously,
unbelievable.
Out of all of those, are there any? Hell, let's check them all, and what if we gun for all of them? Does that resolve any of the problems?
Nope.
I mean, where is there a resolution in any of this?
It's like, what if you participate in the survey, you're participating in the game, and that's about as far as you're going to get. Remember that movie, The War Games? And the computer finally comes up with the answer, simple solution, stop playing the game. That's what we need to do.
That is 100% accurate.
Unbelievable.
That is a perfect description. I mean, honest to God, balanced budget amendment. And then it says clean that does not force tax increases pushed through state legislatures. Great. What in the hell is that going to achieve? Honestly.
I know, it's hysterical. It's sad, but it's funny at the same time.
Do these people even comprehend the fact that the United States obligations under Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid this calendar year increased by $11 trillion? There's no way they could comprehend that, or they wouldn't even allow the words balanced budget come out of their lips.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. These people, I don't know. There's no critical thinking anymore. None. They have woven the box for themselves. Yep.
You know, I had hoped to download some other audio clips.
Audio.
Prior to the program, there's a couple of guys on that just crack me up,
mm-hmm.
and they're from Australia, and it should be, well, it shouldn't be funny, but it is, because they have a somewhat offhand comical way of explaining all of these monetary issues, and it's Clark and Daw are the names of these two gentlemen, mm-hmm. and they're always, you know, one guy is always depicted as a banker, and the other guy is, you know, an interviewer, like Bill Moore's, you know, on PBS.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of them, I have to chuckle every time I hear it, because he's explaining QE3 or quantitative easing, and he says, "Yes, right. Well, what is quantitative easing?" And the guy says, "Well, do I need a lawyer for these questions?" And he says, "You know, I am entitled to representation." And the guy says, "Oh no, these are just some basic questions." He said, "You are in banking, aren't you?" He says, "Well, of course, but you know what kind of questions?" And he said, "Just some theoretical questions." He says, "Oh, theoretical. Well, yes, I can certainly answer theoretical questions. Absolutely, I don't need counsel for that." And he says, "This quantitative easing. What exactly is that?" And he says, "Well, you know, actually, I can speak to that directly. We're advising several clients." When I say clients, I mean governments on quantitative easing. So let me get you the list of what we're advising our clients under the quantitative easing. Open the box, remove the printer from the box, and place it on the desk with the outfeed tray facing the window. Ensure that the window is open. Load the outfeed tray and place the currency on the copy table. Make sure that you select two-sided copy and press print. And the guy says, "And stand well back." He said, "Well, yes, of course, you have to stand well back, because these things can create quite a vacuum as they're reaching cruising altitude." He said, "And what would that be?" He said, "Oh, somewhere in the Superfund area." But it's the truth. And he says, now, you know, that you can't do that on one printer. He says, "Oh, of course not. Well, you need a whole bank of printers. In fact, an entire building." And he says, "Yes, and you wouldn't want to. You'd want to check the wind direction, because you wouldn't want to be doing this upwind." He said, "Oh, of course not." He said, "Why, my gosh, you'd have all that ink all over your face from all that funny money blowing around." And he says, "I'm sorry. What did you, funny money? What did you say?" And he said, "Yes, funny money." He says, "This isn't funny money." He said, "This is quite serious business. This is currency we're printing." He says, "Yeah, but you're printing it. It's just pretend." He says, "Oh, hold on a moment." He gets his cell phone out. He says, "Yeah, this isn't going to work." No, I've explained it to him, and he saw through it straight away. He's not even in the banking business.
Wow.
And, you know, the idea, you know, it's we've talked about it before, the idea that China now owns
mm-hmm.
the United States. But my question is, where in the hell did China get the money to buy our funny money?
They must have printed their own.
Well, there you go.
Jesus, what a scam.
There you go.
What a Ponzi scheme. Good grief.
And in one of the clips that he's explaining the European debt crisis. And I mean, this is fabulous. If you've not seen it, you have got to watch this video, because he explains it perfectly. And it's nothing but a big circle jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he says, well, okay, just answer the questions. He said, you're wasting valuable time here. He says, how much money does Spain owe Portugal? And he says, about $28 billion, but they can't pay it. They don't have the money. He says, and how much money does Portugal owe Spain? Well, about $38 billion, but they can't pay it because they don't have the money. And on ad nauseum.
My God.
And the one thing that seems to get lost on everyone is that there's only one entity in all of this that ends up on the top. And we have this misnomer, this phrase that's been attached to these entities around the world, but in particular here in the United States. And that entity is known as the Federal Reserve Bank, and they're also known as something else. The lender of what? The lender of last resort.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Could you think of a larger farce? They're the lender of only resort.
We're so screwed. We are so screwed. Oh, what a mess.
And well, the irony to me in all of that is the lender of last resort, what are they lending? They're lending that funny money that they're printing it up, but the law says that they have to have collateral. What do they have to have as collateral? One of two things: gold certificates or treasury bonds. Who's responsible to pay for the treasury bonds when they come due? The citizens of the United States of America.
Well, great.
After all, it's a government of the people, for the people, by the people, right? So it's the taxpayer. So it's the taxpayer that's responsible for the debt that's created
by these clowns.
By printing up security or treasury bonds as collateral for the money to bail out banks in this country, foreign banks in other countries. We're responsible. And then these foreign countries, they print up their own debt obligations that are the obligations or the debt of the citizens of those foreign countries. And they use that funny money to buy our funny money. And everybody owes everybody. Which is why I say that at some point we're going to reach critical mass. We're fast approaching it, regardless of who's in the White House, regardless of who's in Congress, regardless of what stupid harebrained scheme they pass tomorrow. Critical mass is fast approaching.
I know.
And when it's reached, there's going to have to be a solution. And that solution is going to be a reset button, the easy button. And the people that will get screwed won't be the bankers. It won't be the lenders of last resort. Because after all, they're not responsible. All they're doing, seriously, all the central banks are doing is they're managing the system.
Mm-hmm.
They just manage the system and they take a percentage, a cut, for their management.
My God.
That's all they're doing.
So they're the rest Madoff, of it, right?
Yeah, the rest of it lays right at the feet of your Congress, and your Congress is answerable to the people, and the people demand that the government do something about the terrible situation, whatever the situation might be. We have starving children in America. Expand the food stamp program. We have starving farmers. Give them a subsidy. You know, the dairy industry, they can't sell enough milk. You know, milk is so cheap that they can't even cover the cost of production. We'll subsidize them. And on it goes. It's endless.
I know.
Carlin's right.
Oh, yeah.
The public sucks.
So, what do we do about it besides stop playing the game?
been saying that all along. It's the only way I see that you get out of this thing intact. Stop participating.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Damn if I know. But I can tell you one thing. If we keep participating, we're SOL as it is.
I know. I feel sad, you know, and I felt really bad. I think it was a week before the election when Terry Rowland said one thing she had always feared was that she would outlive her country. I think that passed a long time ago, Terry. You know, and it is sad to say, but
you're right. And now the
what happened though, Ron? I think with that election, because everybody was sure that Romney was going to get in. I don't know why they thought that, but I think that was the biggest kind of brick to the head. That, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, now I believe it. Now I get it. We're done. The union is, you know, it's gone. Or the Republic, anyway.
Well, I really think that is the realization that the 1%
mm-hmm.
has finally come to begrudgingly. You know, again, I've used that quote from Mark Twain numerous times that hope is the last refuge of a scoundrel. You know, we bitched and fussed and kicked and screamed, but we held out hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, it sits really ill with me that the best hope that we could envision was John McCain or Mitt Romney.
Oh, I can't even, I just get so angry because, you know, I think I sent you an email about the Electoral College and it was from one of the Facebook sites. I don't know whether it was Judith Nossel or Terry Kiley or somebody. Anyway, talking about the framers' original intent of the Electoral College. Well, we've gotten so far away from this. I mean, they would be just wondering what planet they came to, you know, if they saw, even though they would understand technology, the ridiculousness, the circus of it all, and the, you know, that their original intent was just, I guess, swept under the rug a few decades ago, several.
Well, you know, that brings up a question for me, for our government and the Electoral College. How many votes did Biden get for vice president? Or is it just a default thing where, you know, you're voting for one, you're automatically voting for the other?
Well, apparently, because they only give you one place to circle when you've got the two names, it's ridiculous.
Right. Well, that alone is a violation of the 12th Amendment. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
They shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in distinct ballots, the person voted for as vice president. Are they truly casting two ballots?
Well, apparently not.
Because presumably by the 12th Amendment, and this has happened many times in the past, you could have had Barack Obama as president and Mitt Romney as vice president.
Exactly, if they were going of the original way. I don't know what the answer is.
That's just so much semantics at this point. I mean, it really doesn't matter. We know that. And I'm really, you know, I wrote Jenny Beth Martin an email the other day, and I know the lady. She lives right down the road from me. She was one of my customers at my old store.
Wow.
And very well-meaning person, I'm sure. But I'm not very happy with Miss Jenny Beth Martin. She has a platform. She has a pulpit, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And she could have used it to educate people, and instead
Right.
She used it to continue her, you know, the bloviating, the pontificating
right.
on bullshit issues instead of facing the facts. And Billy H. is right. There is no Constitution. Billy, there hasn't been a Constitution since 1861. I would say, quite literally, there hasn't been one since 1791.
Yeah, when George's number on the district.
But we continue along in the delusion that there is one and that we pay homage to it every day.
So now, have you heard the stories of, I don't know if they're true, I haven't researched it, of the states that want to secede? I wonder if,
yes.
I wonder if anything else.
Yeah, well, there is something to it because there's some folks on the internet have created petitions for certain states to secede from the Union, Texas, Louisiana, Florida,
Indiana,
Tennessee, Indiana, several. You know, Vermont has had a secessionist movement for quite a while, which is one reason it surprises me. I guess it shouldn't, that they went largely for Obama in the election. But again, it's just, you know, as George Carlin would say, mental masturbation.
Wow.
And I really like his explanation that, you know what, if you voted, you don't have any right to complain.
Yep.
You know, because I didn't participate in this delusion.
It's so sad, Ron. I don't know. I think we're on our own.
We've been on our own.
Yeah, that's true.
And, I mean, my God, this poor woman, she can't even go to the airport without being gang raped by her own government.
It's and nobody talks about these issues. Nobody. Nobody brings anything up. You hear maybe 10 minutes a year on it from some senator that got inconvenienced at the TSA. And that's it. It all goes away.
And, you know, I don't even know this one, but I don't need to know to be outraged.
I know.
And if my wife had come home with a story like that, I got news for you, I'd be in jail.
Oh, yeah,
because
I know.
There would be some TSA agents taking an aspirin.
They wouldn't be able to sit down for a couple of weeks.
I'm here to tell you, there are a few things, and only a few things, in my little bubble of reality that are off limits. My wife is one of them, and so are my
children.
Absolutely. And no man has ever laid hand on my wife without there being a consequence.
Yep, and you're rightfully to be that way. That's your job, babe. So,
and, you know,
absolutely.
As long as I draw breath, my wife and my children, and as offensive as this concept may be to many people out there, they are my property. They are my responsibility.
Well, yeah.
Their,
I mean,
their well-being is my responsibility.
That's an extension of your heart. That's absolutely. That's your family. And yeah, I know that I'm done petitioning the government, you know, because it doesn't do any good. It's like trying to go over on a boat and petition King George III. It doesn't do any good.
Precisely.
You know.
And
that's,
you know
what's going on.
On the, you know, I know I was ranting on earlier about, you know, the folks that want to impose their moral ideology on others. Let's take the other side of that coin for a moment on the abortion argument, okay? Where in the hell do the people who are proponents, supporters of abortion, and the government, where do they presume to get the authority to say that a minor child can have a medical procedure performed on them without the consent of the responsible guardian or parent? Who granted that authority?
Nobody, as far as I can see.
Because I'm here to tell you, once again, had the situation ever arisen like that with one of my daughters, they would not have to worry about prosecuting the guy or girl. You know, at that point, gender really doesn't matter to me. You have violated my property, my child.
Mm-hmm. Well,
where do these people on either side of the issues, where do they think they get their authority?
Well, I don't know. It's just nobody is outraged enough yet, apparently, on any of these issues. And I know where a lot of this crap comes from. I mean, it's so ironic because look what everybody came away from Europe to get away from that crappy oppression, and then they fought the, you know, 7 or 8 years revolution, made their own country, got away from the king, you know, did the constitution supposedly, hopefully for freedom, and then. Here comes this damn Fabian socialist crap from Europe. Come back over here again, and they just lap it up like Kool-Aid, and it just blows me away. It's like, do we ever learn anything?
Clearly not.
Oh my God.
Clearly not. But I mean, you go back through even our own brief history, 238 years at this point, I believe it is.
36.
You know, you look at all the movements to force ideology, morality down the throats of others. I could not do a show yesterday. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. Number one, you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for anyone that has worn the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I have a tremendous amount of sorrow at their delusions.
Oh, I know. Well, we're all caught up in this matrix, I'm telling you.
I couldn't do it. I could not do it. You know, being in D.C. and going through Arlington, it just...
Oh yeah,
I wept.
Sure.
The senseless loss, you know, this country, or the soldiers of this country, have not fought a conflict to secure their rights and freedom since the Civil War.
Yep.
And the good side, the right side, lost.
I agree.
And I don't say that because I believe in the institution of slavery. I don't.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a moot point because slavery was on its way out, as we pretty much know, and they've lied to us throughout about our history.
Sure.
And,
that
war was about.
I think slavery and the Civil War actually highlights our human hypocrisy. Because as much as the South was correct in the idea of states' rights and individual rights,
sure,
they couldn't see their slaves as individuals.
Yeah, that's a bizarre conundrum there. That's really bizarre.
Well, but is it any different than the same conundrum we have today?
Not much.
You know,
It's perception, absolutely.
It's the same garbage wrapped up in a different package with a new colored bow.
Yep.
Because the people that are on government assistance don't recognize that they're slaves to the system, and the folks that are working and getting robbed every day of their prosperity, you know, they're slaves to the same damn system.
Absolutely. They're just one side of a different cog of the wheel, you know?
Sure. Both sides are enslaved by the same entity.
It's not fun. Are you running out of time?
I have no idea.
I
got about 5 minutes left.
Okay. Well, gosh, thanks for letting me rant on my subjects, and you did a great job in the opening. That's very good. So... Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the accolades, you know. I'm really, you know, I was to the point yesterday and today that, you know, either I'm going to have to change my tone or I'm going to have to quit doing the shows.
Oh, I know. Well, hey, you know, take a page out of Hoxie's book because he lets fly with a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, it's just those people that are going to be offended by it, they're just going to have to be offended. I don't know what else to tell them. But
God bless you, and I'm going to go back to the chat room. Yeah.
You bet. The whole damn thing offends me.
The whole
situation offends me. And so I'm not going to be polite. I'm not going to be politically correct. I'm going to say what's on my mind. I'm going to give you my opinion. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may. It's not like
Absolutely.
I'm risking losing a huge audience in the first place. I think I've been preaching to the choir for over a year. So
I know.
It is what it is.
Well, I know, sweetie. All right, I'm going to go and check out the chat room, and I'll see you guys tomorrow. I don't know who's going to do a show or if we're going to do one, because I know Bill's just, he's in mourning.
I understand.
So, okay, talk to you later.
God bless, hon.
God bless.
Well, everybody, that's going to wrap up another show for the Constitution Hour. For those of you that have tuned in, I appreciate your support. Thanks for listening to us. Don't forget to tune in every night of the week, 7 p.m., right here on patriotfamilieswithays.com on the Blog Talk Radio. We have a complete lineup of shows. Tomorrow night is Patriot Families Chat at 7 p.m., followed on Wednesday at 7 by Miss Linda, right from the left coast. Thursday, Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. Friday is kind of a blank space. Saturday, we most of the time have Mr. Michael Magic with Exposing the Illusion. And then Sunday, yours truly doing Fed Up Frank. And then, of course, back again on Monday for the Constitution Hour. You know, we really, truly deserve better. But it's not going to change unless we change it.
Too many people in America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
I'm back the clock of a tyranny. For if we don't, then who will do it for ourselves? And how about our children?